This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoen. Buzkashi Boys is a shortlist nominee for a 2012 Academy Award in the live-action short film category. The 30-minute film is about the friendship between a street kid in Kabul and the son of a poor blacksmith who both have dreams of a better life. They also both love buzkashi, the national sport in Afghanistan that's not unlike polo, except that it's more violent and it's played with a dead goat's carcass. The film is the first made by the Afghan Film Project, shot entirely in Kabul, starring Afghan actors with a crew that included many Afghanis. It was co-written and directed by our guest Sam French, founding board member of the Afghan Film Project. He's been living in Kabul for 4 years and involved with a number of projects to build up the country's film industry. He's the president and founder of Development Pictures, where he's executive producer of Kabul at Work. That's a fascinating series of vignettes about everyday Afghanis whom he says are often misunderstood and misrepresented. And it's a great pleasure to have you with us on Radio Times, Sam French, and congratulations on the film.
Well, thank you, Marty. It's good to be on.
Nice to have you on. I know you just flew in from Kabul, so I appreciate the fact that you're here. Where did this idea of this film come from? And I have to say, it's beautiful and touching.
Oh, thank you for that. I appreciate it. Well, I've been in Afghanistan, as you said, since 2008. And one of the things that I saw was the misperception between what's seen on the news and what I see every day on the streets. I mean, when you look at the news here in America, you think the whole country's at war and it's just bullets, bombs, and burqas. But I was welcomed in with open arms when I got to Kabul. And I saw people on the street and I became friends with Afghans. And so one of the missions became for me was to show another side of the story. So in 2009, my friend actually came over and visited me. Martin Rowe, who I went to USC Film School with.
Wow.
And we went around Kabul. And he said, Sam, look, you're doing documentaries. You should do a narrative film. So that sparked the entire idea of creating this Afghan film project, which, you know, the idea is to train Afghan filmmakers and foster Afghanistan's film industry. And Buzkashi Boys became our first project.
How did you find these two boys who star in this film? And I have to say, children in films are irresistible. They have great presence and great charisma and great chemistry between the two of them.
Well, it's interesting because it's not like you can go to central casting and put out a casting call and get people to come and audition for you. Afghanistan used to have a thriving film industry back in the 70s, and it does have a TV industry now. But child actors are very hard to find. So luckily, we got in touch with a bunch of older Afghan filmmakers who were working, again, now that the Taliban are gone. And we managed to find this young man named Jawan Mard, who was absolutely fantastic. And when I interviewed him, I asked him about his school, and he didn't really respond that well. And then I asked him why he wanted to be an actor, and
yes.
He said, well, when I saw Al Pacino in Scarface, I knew
really?
Right then I wanted to be an actor. So
wow.
He was amazing. But to find our lead character was very difficult.
Fawad is his name, yes?
Fawad is his name, yeah. And I'd been there for a couple of years, and I kept running into this kid on the street in Kabul called Chicken Street, which is, they sell tchotchkes and souvenirs to the expat community. And there are kids who beg on the street, they're street kids. And this kid, Fawad, would sell maps to foreigners. And he was just the best kid I've ever met.
His Why heart, do you say that?
His heart was just so big. He wanted to be your bodyguard and protect you from the other kids. He was amazing. And I just kept coming back to him because he, in my mind, was the character I had written.
Hmm.
So I cast him in the film.
And does he have a family? I mean, obviously he was helping to support his family, but what is his family like? And what did they think about him being in a film?
Well, his father passed away many years ago. So he had been supporting his mom by selling maps on the street. And of course, his mom can't work in Afghanistan. It's, very hard for women to work,
right.
Especially uneducated women. So, he had come from a very poor background. But, he's such a great kid that he actually now is being put through school. By the generosity of some other foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
If they weren't doing it, I would do it. I mean, he's amazing. And he's getting straight A's. And he wants to, go to the best school in the country. And he's probably going to do it. But that was how I found him.
And did you have to get permission from his mother to put him in your film?
We did. We did.
And was she in any way reluctant, or did she understand what you were offering her child?
Yeah, she understood. I mean, she was somewhat reluctant, but we convinced her. And, the pre-production for this film took over a year. And that was because we had to convince everyone that this had never been done before, in a way, having a collaboration between Western filmmakers and Afghan filmmakers. So we had a lot of convincing to do. And we definitely convinced her, but because we had the government on our side, and we had an Afghan crew who were there to say that we were okay, so she gives permission.
Wow. There, I have to say, it's a beautiful-looking film, and in part because clearly Afghanistan has some unbelievable beauty. The mountains around Kabul, it's shot entirely in Kabul itself. Also, you shoot a competition, a Bushkashi sport. I'm assuming that was really happening and you happened to be there with your cameras. It wasn't set up for the film itself.
Actually.
Or maybe I'm entirely wrong.
Actually, there's a very interesting story behind the whole Bushkashi match. Now, I should say that, this was a challenging production. And our producer, Ariel Nasser, produced miracles to make this whole thing happen. And we got an amazing support from L.A. Through Martin Rowe, who I co-wrote the script with, and is our co-producer, who brought the Western crew out. But to get this Bushkashi match happening was quite a challenge.
Yeah.
And Ariel pulled off quite a feat.
Yeah.
Now, in Afghanistan, things don't happen normally when they say they're going to happen. So we had been told the Bushkashi match was going to happen on a Friday. And the crew got there on a Tuesday with one camera body and one zoom lens. And we got a call Tuesday night saying, well, it's not happening Friday, it's happening Wednesday. So we had to decide whether to go and film it or not. And we decided to do it. We woke up the next morning, and it was the biggest blizzard I've ever seen in my life. And we went out anyway and filmed. Of course, we got some amazing footage.
You did. Yeah. And it's clearly snowing. And what we see are these men on horseback. And it does have that sort of polo look to it, sort of capture the flag polo.
Mm-hmm.
And they are fighting over this goat carcass.
Yeah. I should explain what Bushkashi is,
yes,
I suppose.
Indeed.
Yeah. Bushkashi is the national sport of Afghanistan. It's played regionally. But it's basically a bunch of horsemen who fight over a goat carcass, which is placed in the ground. They try to pick it up from the ground from horseback, and they have to go around a flag, come back and throw it back in the circle.
Wow.
Now, originally it was every man for himself. And if you were a heroic Bushkashi rider, you'd gain accolades. And now it's a team sport, really, supported by different districts.
Yeah.
But it's a brutal game, and every Bushkashi rider I've ever met has broken every bone in his body.
Just because it's rough between the players, but also you're on horseback and you're trying to haul this carcass around.
Yeah,
right?
And they train the horses to rear up and jump into the circle. I mean, it's a brutal game, but it's a very Afghan.
Well, and these two boys, they want to be Bushkashi riders. I mean, they want to be heroes like these players.
Yeah, they do. And it's funny because when we were writing the story, right, stories, characters are like stones. You know, if you've ever walked a beach with pebbles on it, and you reach down and you pick up one, it's a beautiful pebble. And there are hundreds and there are thousands of them, right? So you have to choose what one you want to pick up. So we wanted to tell a story about two kids, which is a universal story of coming of age, and then a unique story about Bushkashi, basically.
And you filmed this, it was about a 16 days, I guess when you added it all up, a 16-day shoot?
Yeah, it was a 16-day shoot, but of course it's been a year in pre-production.
I understand,
And we had to bring all of the Western crew over, logistics were very challenging. Again, Ariel produced miracles. We had to get permission from the Afghan government and from the filmmakers that we were working with in Afghanistan. And the whole thing was conceived initially as a training project. So we trained 12 Afghan trainees on the production, and that was very important for us, and first and foremost in the production, actually, because it's part of the Afghan Film Project, which that's its mission and mandate. So the Western filmmakers came over and mentored these Afghan trainees on the production.
And were people, I'm assuming, I mean, it's clearly you're filming on the streets of Kabul. Was there a lot of attention? Were people gathering around to see what the heck you were doing, or did they go about their everyday life? Objects of curiosity.
Yeah, we definitely were objects of curiosity. And you might think, you might wonder, you know, what the biggest challenges were. One of the biggest challenges was actually when you point a camera at in the street, everyone's very curious,
yes.
You know? And so crowd control. I mean, in the West, you know, you'd have money to pay for extras. We had to steal a lot of the shots in the market. We shot in this very crowded market. And we got permission, obviously, from the community who lived there. But, of course, you turn the camera on, and all of a sudden you yell cut, and you look behind you, and there's 100 people around you looking into the monitor, seeing what you're shooting. So, and all curious. I mean, and it wasn't in any way threatening, you know. It was a curious thing, but it was very challenging to deal with, obviously.
I know this film has debuted in Kabul. What was the reaction?
Well, that is a very good question, because I was so excited to show this film to the Afghans, right? I mean, you can see the whole thing as an Afghan film. For Afghans, made by Afghans in collaboration with Westerners, right? So it was trying to bridge both worlds, right? So we did a whole film festival run abroad. It's a great acclaim. I mean, it's played pretty well. But then we had this big premiere in Kabul a couple months ago in October. And it was received amazingly. I mean, in the West, there's some jokes in the film, right? And in the subtitles, you know, people read them and titter or laugh a little bit because they know it's funny. We had a screening with over 500 people and 50 people trying to get in at the door. And when they heard the characters speak the lines, uproarious laughter. And when the Buzkashi announcer announced the match, you know, there's a scene in the film where he announces, everybody clapped for these Buzkashi riders. The entire audience clapped and started cheering. So it was an amazing reception.
And I'm assuming all the people that acted in the film were there as well.
Oh, of course.
The little boys, the father.
Yeah. So we actually had a red carpet, I think the first time.
An actual red carpet. And Klieg lights. And
we made one, yeah. We made one. And everybody were there working on the ground. So it was an amazing place, an amazingly creative place to be. And so I decided to stay.
And what happened to the girl you fell in love with?
Well, she left a year later. I stayed because I had started a company called Development Pictures, doing documentaries, and I wanted to grow the company. And we stayed together for 2.5 years. Mm. But the long-distance relationships, you know, it takes a toll.
Sure.
It's hard. And It's also actually very hard living and working in Afghanistan, which is a war zone, you know? And it's not necessarily, I don't feel in danger all day, every day, you know. But there's a general stress level, you know, that you have. So bridging the gap between that world and the Western world is very hard. So every time I come back, it takes a long time to decompress from that journey, you know. So, you know, it took a toll. And unfortunately, me and Anna broke up in February of this year.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
But it's okay.
It seems like an almost cliche question, but it sounds like you fell in love with Afghanistan.
Well, yeah, I wasn't going to say that cliche.
I know. I'm embarrassed that I said that, but it was in my head. What can I say?
I did fall in love with Afghanistan. I mean, I fell in love with the people, you know. And as I said, I mean, people, you know, are all wonderful, you know. And there's so many stories there. So it's just a rich tapestry. And so we're doing a lot of projects, you know.
And I want to talk about that and talk about cliches here. One of the things that I have to say, just in fact, looking at some of your work and some of the work that I've seen the other people doing in Afghanistan, and again, I'm embarrassed to say this, they're beautiful people. They're beautiful looking people. I mean, maybe it's just the geography and all the genes that got mixed up there. Certainly to an outsider, that's what it looks like.
No, it is, actually. One thing, it's amazing. My 96-year-old grandmother, when she saw some of my work, said, "Wow, they look just like us."
Ah.
Which...
Do you think that's true?
Well, no. I mean, as you say, they're beautiful people. But I think what she meant was, you know, in seeing the other side of the thing, right? In seeing beyond the news, to see real people living real lives, you know, that's our mission. You know, and so it was amazing to hear her say that, you know. And they are beautiful people. And they're people who have hopes and dreams just like everybody else.
Well, let me reintroduce you. And Sam French is our guest today on Radio Times. He's a founding board member of the Afghan Film Project. And the film project has made its first film called Buzkashi Boys. And it is, as I said, shortlist nominee for an Academy Award in the live action short film category this year. And he's also, co-wrote and directed that film. He's also the president and founder of Development Pictures and executive producer of this really fascinating series of stories about everyday Afghanis called Kabul at Work. And as he has been saying, it's a city and a country that has surprised him and probably not lived down to the many things that have been said about Afghanistan. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I have to say, I really enjoyed the Kabul at Work. And these vignettes, go to your website, and these vignettes of people with, you know, everyday jobs, but in certain ways unusual jobs. Some of them titled, Who is the Rubbish Recycler? Who is the Police Commando? Who is the Checkpoint Guard? There's a guy that takes care of an old British cemetery. That is his job. There's a bodybuilder. And it's showing, I guess, the diversity of people and what they do.
Yeah, that's the idea behind the series. And, you know, and it's an amazing, amazing project. I can say that because my colleague David Gill is the creative director, and he has done an amazing job, and it's been his life for the past couple of years. And it started out as a book, and then it became, you know, a website where we just went out and profiled people, and then it became a TV series, which actually aired on Afghan National Television a few months ago. And it was so successful, it had three reruns. Because Afghans themselves hadn't seen their city in this way either, right? So it's not just for the West. But, right. Yeah, the idea behind the series is to go beyond the headlines and to show people, normal, everyday people, like the guy who sells phone cards in the street, you know, the rubbish recycler, or, you know, everyday people who are working to make the city thrum and hive, you know.
There are women that we see working. I have to say, obviously, in Buzkashi Boys is about two boys, but I didn't see any women in this film. What is it like to, or can you work with women in Afghanistan making movies or making shorts?
Yes, you can work with women. And there are women filmmakers working in Afghanistan. And we worked with a wonderful woman filmmaker on the making of another documentary we did about women in prison, which I'd love to talk about, yes, at some point. But yeah, for Buzkashi Boys, you know what they say in the film industry, never work with children or animals. And we did both, and we did it in Afghanistan. And so, you know, having, you know, we consciously thought about this while writing the script, to not actually deal with female characters, because I just didn't, it's too much of a challenge, you know. And in terms of getting our trainees, you know, we actually had a couple of female trainees, and they dropped out at the last minute, unfortunately. Because it's hard, yeah, to, you know, for a woman to go out there in the world and put themselves out there like that. It's courageous, and so, you know, yes, you can, and we do work with them.
Some of the scenes that seem to be just the kind of cinema verite scenes in your short film, and also in Kabul at Work, you do see, you know, women covered with burqas walking through and sometimes scurrying through the streets. So that's a common sight.
Oh, yeah. It's a very common sight. It's not as common as it would have been under the Taliban.
Right.
And that's the thing. It's, you know, this country is going under a huge change right now. And I find hope in the young generation. And that's the people that we try to foster, you know, because they're hungry for change. I mean, it's not just film. I mean, we work with people like Travis and David Gill, who's doing this Kabul at Work series that we do, who work with young rock stars and young graffiti artists. There's a female graffiti artist in Kabul at Work. She's amazing. And she goes out and she does graffiti in Kabul. And so there's the young generation is hungry for change, and they're hungry to sort of see something different. So it's an incredible dichotomy, which is what Buzkashi Boys is trying to
do. I was just going to say, this is really what the film is about.
Yeah. The dichotomy between the tradition, right? And
wanting something more.
Yeah.
Bigger.
Exactly. And I don't want to give away the ending of Buzkashi Boys.
No, I don't either.
But yeah, go see the movie. but that's the idea. Yeah.
There's a film I know you're working on called Injustice. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, this film has a long and storied history. It's taken a while. But my colleague Clementine Malpass is an amazing director. She and Leslie Knott, who is a colleague of mine, Leslie and I produced the film, but Clem directed it. The film is about women who have been thrown into prison for moral crimes. So, and by moral crimes, I mean adultery and things that are moral, but they're actually not crimes on the books, you know? So one of our subjects was raped by her cousin's husband. She became pregnant and went to the family to sort of demand blood money, and they refused, so she went to the police, and she was probably thrown into prison for adultery. Of course, he was also thrown into prison for rape, because they proved that he raped her. So her actual charge was forced adultery, which is sort of insane.
Did you film her in prison? Or are
So the film is about her journey through this justice system, as well as another character who was abused by her husband quite badly and then ran away with a younger man, and then was in a village, and the villagers called the police, and they then arrested them. And they were then in prison, separated by a single wall, right? Exchanging notes with each other. I mean, it's an amazing love story. But, you know, we followed them for over a year now, a year and a half, I suppose. And there was a, last fall, there was a huge press publicity about this, one of our characters. And as a result, my my friend Kim Motley, he's a lawyer, a female lawyer in Afghanistan, actually one of the only female private defense attorneys. She represented our character, and we petitioned Karzai, and Karzai ended up pardoning her and getting out of prison. So, which is good, you would think, right?
Yes, you would think.
But now she is in a women's shelter, and she faces a terrible choice, to either stay there for the rest of her life because she's been shamed in the eyes of her family.
So literally in a shelter, I mean staying indoors? Or
exactly. It's like another prison in a way, you know? Or to marry her attacker to redeem her honor in the eyes of society. So this is the choice that she faces, and it's a choice a lot of women face. I mean, it's still female equality is definitely has a long way to go. And so this film, what we're trying to do with this film is at least shine a light on two women who are facing these issues that thousands and thousands of women face every day.
And it's the title is two words, in and then justice, right?
In dash justice, yeah.
This is such a sensitive topic. Were these women willing to, I mean, clearly they were willing to talk with you. Did it take some coaxing to get them to tell you about their lives?
Well, again, Clem is an amazing director, you know, and we worked with a wonderful other camerawoman slash fixer to get access to the prisons. And it took months and months and months and months. But of course, this is what you do in documentary filmmaking. I mean, you know, Clem spent months, and she did such an amazing job gaining the trust of these women, and she feels very strongly about them and their stories as people, you know? So, yeah, it takes a while. And this is a very tough story. And I don't think it's been done before because it's very hard to get access.
Sure.
You know?
And obviously, I mean, the prison cooperated, but did it take some wearing them down to get permission to go in there?
Yeah, we had support at the beginning from the European Union. So we managed to get access through them, which is great. Yeah.
And were you able to talk to their families, or was it really focused on these women and their stories?
It was focused on these women and their stories. I mean, it's a character-based
piece
about these women. But, you know, these women then represent the larger issue, you know. So, I mean, we're finishing up now. I mean, our other character has been released from prison as well. She was actually, I mean, I could go on for hours, but she was actually tricked into marrying an older man. So she's figuring out if she can get a divorce now from him and marry the younger man that she's in love with. I mean, you can't write this stuff. You can make it up.
No, indeed. And we're almost up on a break here. I mean, on the one hand, you know, we hear about this extraordinary country and you talk about the resilience of the people. And then we hear about the difficulties in this situation that these women have to face in this film. These little boys are, you know, they're desperately poor. They're sort of on their own to try to figure out life for themselves.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very hard place to make it, you know. And I think, you know, everyone thinks the war is the big problem, and it is absolutely. But one of the biggest problems in Afghanistan is poverty and lack of opportunity, right? And the economy has been propped up by our international aid as aid for the past 11 years. And when we leave, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting adjustment. I mean, we'll see what happens. But I hope that people can achieve their hopes and dreams.
And that's Sam French, our guest today on Radio Times. He's a filmmaker. He has been living in Kabul, Afghanistan for the last 4 years. We're talking about his work there, developing the Afghan film industry, developing actors and members of the crew, and talking about his life there. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Pifaro, the Renaissance band, supports WHYY. This weekend, Pifaro celebrates the holidays in German Renaissance style with three area concerts. Featuring soprano Laura Himes, Pifaro will perform chorales, hymns, motets, and seasonal party music from composers Michael Praetorius and others. And audience participation is welcome for the traditional Wechselgesang. Concerts are in Chestnut Hill December 21st, Center City December 22nd, and Wilmington December 23rd. Tickets, times, and venue locations at pifaro.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Christoph Waltz talks about starring in Quentin Tarantino's new film Django Unchained. Waltz won an Oscar as well as a Golden Globe, BAFTA, and SAG Award for his portrayal of the Nazi SS officer Hans Landa in Tarantino's previous film Inglourious Basterds. Join us
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll look at the firearms made in the U.S. and their role in gun control policies. Also, people who've known homelessness take to writing and don't mind if attention turns to them only at Christmas. They say at least there's that. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Sam French in this hour of the show. He grew up just outside of Philadelphia and has been living in Kabul since 2008. We've been talking about his work making movies there, also helping to develop the country's film industry. And Buzkashi Boys, which he co-wrote and directed, is a shortlist nominee for an Oscar. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Marcia from Center City, Philadelphia to join us. Marcia, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I wanted to know if Sam speaks Dari, and is this the way he communicates when he's filming? Is it a language that he spoke before he went to Afghanistan, or is it something he picked up while there?
Marcia, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Sam.
Well, yeah, Marcia, that's a very good question. I did not know Dari at all before I went to Afghanistan. And I actually still don't know it as well as I should, to be honest. I mean, I can get by. I can have a full conversation with people. But we do work, and we did work with amazing Afghans on the production of Buzkashi Boys. My director's trainee, the person I was training on the production, actually, was the son of the biggest theater actor in Afghanistan. So he was able to translate my directing and my intention to the actors. So that worked out very well. And in daily life, you know, it's always a challenge. But, yeah, I managed to get by. And there's enough people who speak English that it's okay.
And that's the language you hear in Kabul, for instance?
Yeah. And, I mean, I can speak a little bit of it. I should definitely speak more after 4.5 years. I know that. But yeah, it's related to Farsi, which they speak in Iran. So it's a Persian language.
Marcia, thanks for your call to Radio Times. You can call as well. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. So where literally do you live in Kabul?
I live in a neighborhood called Kale Fethullah. And it's interesting because there's two different Kabuls. There's the Kabul where, you know, there's the embassies and the UN compound, right? And if you are at an embassy, if you're at the U.S., if you live at the U.S. embassy, you know, you don't really live in Kabul. And you never get outside. And you can never really go on the streets. And every time you do, you're in an armored car and in a convoy with two armed guards. So everyone treats you with suspicion and everything like that. And this is one thing that I'm constantly fighting against, is misperception of the city itself. I live in a nice little neighborhood. You know, my neighbor's a tailor. He makes me suits. You know, I have a grocer across the street. And everybody, there's a tea shop right next door. And everybody's very friendly and hospitable. And when I tell people who live at the U.S. Embassy or people in America that my life, which is basically, you know, I have no arm guards and I can go out and I take local taxis and I can go everywhere. You know, I'm met with disbelief. But it is possible.
Mm-hmm. And do you go out looking as you do now, which just you look like a regular Westerner, right?
Yeah, I do go out looking like I do now. And here's the thing. I mean, Afghans don't hate Americans. I mean, first of all, we're allies. Our countries are allies. And, you know, my neighbors hate the Taliban more than I do, you know. And the Taliban don't have a presence in Kabul, right? So if you're talking about security, I mean, yes, there are twice or three times a year there are spectacular attacks by people infiltrating the city and blowing themselves up or staging coordinated attacks, right? But, I mean, people here think it happens every day because that's all they see in the news, right? It happens twice, two or three times a year. And, you know, they attack the government ministries, they attack the UN compound, they attack the U.S. embassy, they attack the big targets, right? So I don't stand outside the parliament all day, every day, you know, and I keep a low profile. So, you know, you take into account security risks and you make an assessment, you know, but I'm much more at risk dying in a car accident than I am dying in a terrorist attack.
Do you get outside of Kabul? Have you explored other parts of the country?
Yeah. No, I mean, I did when I first got there, I was doing news stories and, you know, through my company Development Pictures, we do a lot of documentaries. So we get all over the place. I've been on the border of Pakistan. I've been on the border up with Iran, been down in Helmand, Jalalabad. And it's much more dangerous when you go in the provinces. I mean, up in Bamiyan, it's relatively safe, although recently there was an attack there too. So it's getting, it's getting more and more dangerous. But in Kabul itself, you know, it's relatively safe still. But, you know, when you go out in the provinces, you do take risks and, you know, you have to account for them.
There are a couple scenes in your film. One where one of the boys is looking for the other boy, and he goes into what looks like a bus cemetery. I mean, these are buses all piled up on top of each other. These two boys also go exploring what looks like a bombed out maybe palace or some kind of a government building. Mm-hmm. And they're such powerful images, obviously left over from a previous time.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing we wanted to do. You know, is actually shoot on location in Kabul because it's such a stunningly beautiful place in its own way. The bus graveyard we shot in, you know, it is piled up with these buses that are basically discarded heaps.
Yeah.
And we were actually going to shoot that a week later, and we got a call saying some Pakistani company had bought the whole thing for scrap metal and they were going to cart it away the next day. So we had to, you know, make frantic phone calls saying, wait one more day and change the entire schedule and go and shoot the bus graveyard. And so that's gone now. Mm-hmm. And the production was plagued with challenges like that, which we overcame. And again, Ariel Nasser was an amazing producer who did a great job. But Darulaman Palace, which is also where we shot, we had to get permission from the Airborne Division of the Army to shoot there. It's a national landmark.
But all shot up.
It's all shot up.
It looks like all shot up.
Yeah, it was used as parliament at one point and then various different ministries and then as an ammo dump, and it was shelled by all sides in the Civil War. And so, you know, the roofs are all collapsed. One shell went through the whole thing and, you know, destroyed everything. So, we did a lot of wrecking before we went and allowed the kids to go up and climb up these ladders. Because what we do in the film is we have them a scene, they go on the roof of this palace, and it's gorgeous. I mean, it's these rusting steel girders piercing the sky, the sort of the relic of Afghanistan, and these two kids who are dreaming of the future.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reason we wanted to do that. So it's gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. And we also seen scenes in Kabul. I mean, it looks like it's choked with traffic. I mean, it looks like the 20th century sort of juxtaposed against maybe the 14th century. I'm not sure.
That's very perceptive, actually, because that's actually one of the things we were talking about during the writing and production of the film was this film could be a period film, you know? It's a film about a son of a blacksmith, right? This trade is the same as it was, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And then a kid on the streets who's basically giving blessings with this incense called spand, which is these seeds that you put in a charcoal filled can, and it releases this pungent smoke, which is a blessing. So this is, you know, it could be a period film, but it's happening now, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, I do too. Let me get Alan from Mount Airy to join us on Radio Times. And Alan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
It's a pleasure to hear this. I was in Afghanistan in the 60s and 70s and got to witness Pushkazi and Bamiyan before the Buddha was destroyed.
Oh, wow.
And it was just... it was just an amazing event. We were up there, and there were just a very few people, a few Westerners. We were actually going up the Bandymere to the lakes. But anyway, we were in town, and someone said, "Bushkazi, Bushkazi," and they pointed out into this valley, and we walked out there, and out of the hills, one at a time, came these incredible riders, just out of like a, you know, a Spanish spaghetti western, and they were just these men that were fantastic looking, and the halftime, when they took a little rest, everyone sat down, and you could see these guys were like totally cut up, and all they ate were a couple of figs, and during halftime, the halftime entertainment was a sort of the village idiot who ran around in the sand and threw rocks at himself and did crazy things. So I'm just happy to see that it's still going on, because people were worried at that time with the change of governments coming in and the game might end. So, and how do you get to see your movie? I would really love to see it.
Yeah, Alan, first of all, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and that description is just so vivid and live. Yeah. Go ahead, Sam.
I couldn't describe it better than myself, Alan. Yeah, exactly. First of all, yeah, Bamiyan's beautiful and Bandymere is beautiful, and it's amazing that you were there. And there was a lot of people there at the time. It's still beautiful, even though the Buddhas are gone. And I'd like to talk about the archaeological history of Afghanistan as well, because it's the center of the Silk Road and everything. But to answer your question about how you can see Buzkashi Boys, we're actually having a screening here in Philadelphia in Bryn Mawr on the main line.
Saturday at 11.
Saturday at 11 o'clock a.m. Doors open at 11. So if you could make that, that would be great. Come with free admission. And we also, if you go to the website, buzkashiboys.com, which I believe might be on the Radio Times website.
Yeah, we link to it.
Then you can go to our website and you can sign up for a mailing list and we can get you a DVD and find out when other screenings will happen.
Alan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And you can call as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. I know something else you're working on. I'm going to butcher the name.
Mes Einach.
Yeah. Mes Einach. And this is a Buddhist temple that happens to be, or community, I guess, that's on top of a copper mine in Afghanistan.
Yeah, it's an ancient 2,500-year-old city. You know, Afghanistan was the center of the Silk Road, you know, and so it's a melange of cultures that have all intermixed, you know. So there was a thriving Buddhist culture there. And as Alan mentioned, there was these Buddhas in Bamiyan that were destroyed by the Taliban in the late, just before we invaded, basically, which is a terrible tragedy. But there's a city. It's called Mes Einach that they discovered a few years ago, and it's incredible. Mes Einach means little copper well, and it sits directly on top of the biggest copper deposit in Afghanistan. And this is why we're making a movie about it, because the Chinese have bought the rights to mine this copper. And so on Christmas Day this year, in a week, they're going to blow the whole site up and start strip mining the copper.
That's the plan?
That's the plan. I hope it doesn't happen, and I think there's been some public outcry, although it has to be noted that the interesting thing that we find in making the film is the balance between the preserving the cultural heritage and the history of Afghanistan and its future. I mean, the Chinese paid a lot of money for this copper, and Afghanistan has natural resources that, if exploited, could help it. You know, so it's not for me, it's an interesting challenge. You know, I'm, again, producing the film, and my you know, director Sophie Barry is there shooting right now. So she's an amazing filmmaker. And we'll see what happens. I hope they don't blow it up on Christmas Day.
Certainly not on Christmas Day. You grew up outside of Philadelphia. Were you always a lover of film, movies?
Yeah, I have always been a lover of films. And I actually have always been a lover of stories.
Oh.
You know, I grew up reading books. That's what I did.
What did you read? I mean, what did you...
I read, you know... everything. A lot of science fiction and fantasy, yeah. to be honest, but also everything under the sun. And, you know, I love stories. And I love telling stories. And so, you know, film for me is the way for me to tell the story. You know, and I...
Because you're a visual person?
I'm a visual person, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love the idea of... And I'm also a people person, right? And I love talking. I love working with people. And filmmaking is a collaborative effort. So... You know, Buzkashi Boys was not just me running around shooting it. We had an amazing crew out there who all worked hard to make it happen. Ariel Nasser, producer, and Martin Rowe, my co-producer and co-writer, and Dirty Robber in Los Angeles. But, you know, I'm writing a feature film script now. That's my personal plan, and mm-hmm. it's going to be about my life and you know, sort of personal to me and the challenges I face in Afghanistan and the expatriate lifestyle in Afghanistan, which is unique and hasn't really been seen. You know, it's an incredibly varied lifestyle with a lot of people all sort of on top of each other, and it's going to go into perceptions of, you know, as we talked about, women and religion and politics, and have a bigger, more of a grander scope. And I'm working on that now.
But thinking of, I mean, as a kind of a fictional film.
As a fictional film, right. Yeah, because, you know, we shot Buzkashi Boys and we can do it. You know, we proved that it's going to be done, right? So we want to do a feature film next. Yeah. But we also, through the African Film Project, we're maintaining our work, and next year we want to do a big film festival, which is, you know, would be a 6-month training program for Afghan filmmakers, and then showing their films with international filmmakers, and that's, we're trying to get funding for that now. And you know, we're continuing on with Kabul at work. We're doing Afghanistan at work next, which is going all over the country and doing these characters. So there's a lot of work ahead for us. Definitely.
Was there a film as a kid growing up, or perhaps even as a teenager or young adult growing up, that still speaks to you?
Well, you know, you always...
There's so many.
There's so many. I mean,
you're talking to someone who loves movies, yeah. So but go ahead.
I mean, you got to love Back to the Future or The Princess,
that's interesting.
The Princess Bride.
Right.
I mean, both. I think both perfect films, to be honest.
That's so fascinating.
You know, and I love Fight Club and The Matrix, and I love The English Patient.
That's such a mix.
I know it's romantic, yeah.
It's romantic, but such a mix of story, of filmmaking, too.
I know, yeah. Well, a good story is a good story. And as I said, you know... There are stones, you know, on the beach, right? And you have to choose which ones you want to pick up, you know? And every one of them is beautiful, you know? And as you wander the beach, it's like, which one do I do? Which one do I do next? And, you know, for me in my own personal life, you know, I feel like people are like pebbles on a beach as well, you know? And we sort of, the tide washes in, we get tumbled together for a while, you know? And then that's what I've been doing in Afghanistan for 4.5 years, you know? But I feel like for me, the tide might be going back out again. And... you know, time to win, when try to start winning my way home. So, you know, I'm in January, I'll be in Los Angeles. Yeah. The Academy Award nominations come out January 10th. And I hope to sort of start, you know, reconnecting with the friends that I have not seen for 4.5 years. I mean, and that's been a tough thing.
So for you, home is Los Angeles, or are you homeless at this point?
This is
or?
The thing. I mean, you know, it's it's a very transient lifestyle in Afghanistan. You know, and so I was in Los Angeles for 6 years, and I'm a filmmaker, and I love the city, and I have a lot of friends there. So, you know, I think that's where I will be ending up, and I'm going to start doing that in January, I think. Although, of course, I will always stay in love with Afghanistan, and I'll become. Of course, our projects will continue this year, but you know.
Well, it's been a great pleasure, and I thank you for your work. I congratulate you for your work as well.
Thank you very much, Marty. I appreciate it.
We appreciate having you here. Sam French, a founding board member of the Afghan Film Project. And their first film, Buzkashi Boys, is going to be shown at the Bryn Mawr Film Institute this Saturday at 11 o'clock. And he also is the president and founder of Development Pictures, working in Kabul, Afghanistan. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. We put some pictures of our guest on our Facebook page. And let's see, Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscow. Thank you so much for joining us.